Ray, Wayne, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I'm Andrew.
It's a full house, guys. I can't think of the last time we had all four of us here at the same time.
Oh, it's going to be terrible. We're going to be talking over each other. It's just too many people. Too many people. Three's company, four's a crowd.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to hang out right now.
Oh, yeah, I'm out. I'm gone.
Yeah.
No, it's exciting. We've got, well, there's a lot of good stuff. It was a big ass comic week, at least in DC Comics. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
So when Andrew's not here, that's generally telltale that, you know, it was a bad week in comics.
Is that
the commentary?
I think it's more
it's Andrew just a bad week in life.
Yeah, Andrew's just busy that week. That's what that means.
Look at how important Andrew is. He's too busy to podcast.
Regrettably.
Is a big DC week really a big week for Andrew since his store doesn't buy DC books?
I went to the comic store and bought DC this week.
I don't know if Wayne was on that episode, but a little while ago, they went back after several years of not stocking DC new releases. They started, I think when they moved to this new location, they started stocking DC new releases again.
I think I did forget that. Why did your comic shop stop stocking DC comics as if it's not one of the two biggest comic manufacturers out there?
Yeah. So this was back during the pandemic when DC switched to
Tuesday
away from Diamond and started doing Tuesdays. So essentially there was some thing they had to do differently to get their DC books, and they didn't get it on time, and they got reading between the lines, they were upset at the transaction and decided, well, we're just not going to stock new DC books, and they didn't for years. But some point, like I said, they moved to a new location in the past year, and I think when they did that, they started stocking them again.
I wonder if their accountant said, start buying damn DC books.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they don't have an accountant, but it's two people who own it and are I think they're the only employees really. So, but I was happy for them to go back and start stocking DC. And so I've got some Wonder Woman to talk about. I got some Detective to talk about. So I got some DC to talk about this week.
Right. It's an exciting week. I'm looking forward to getting to those books. But before we do, you guys are all caught up. Well, I don't know. Are all of you caught up on Agatha? Am I the only one not caught up on Agatha?
No, I'm not caught up either.
Oh, you're not caught up, Wayne? You didn't watch it this week?
Feel free to spoil. I read the Wikipedia article.
Andrew, did you watch it?
Of course. Yeah, no. My wife and I have very much gotten into watching Agatha, usually Thursday nights, because Wednesday night is like my game group night. So we usually just watch it Thursday. I've really, really enjoyed Agatha. Now, the first episode was a little rough, I got to say.
Yeah.
But I've really enjoyed what's happened, especially the last 2-3 episodes. But Aaron, if I remember right, you weren't crazy about the first episode either, but you're caught up now. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, and, you know, I said this last week, but I would not have jumped back into it if you and Paul and Wayne had not spoken so highly about it, because I hard quit the first episode midway through.
Yeah.
And I just really did not care for it. But I have enjoyed every single episode since. So I'm very much enjoying it. I watched it this morning before we started recording, and so I'm current on all episodes released. I like what it's doing. I have one complaint about the series, and it's a complaint just that I have really grown to despise the TV season that's focused on these different achievements you have to earn.
Different challenges.
It's so formulaic. I've grown really tired of that. However, I think they're doing it well. You know, I've found all of this rather entertaining. But, you know, I just hate because they kind of lay it out in the first episode. And you're like, crap, we're going to have another one of these challenges every single episode. You know, but I do feel like they're being executed well.
Yeah, well, I love all the different costuming. Whoever is doing the costume on that show just must, they're working hard. But, man, I really like how – I do like how with each challenge, it's a different era, different costumes, different look.
Well, it's a callback to WandaVision, too, how with each episode they would jump to a new decade of TV. Yes. Now it's with each challenge you jump to a new decade.
Yes. Well, so this was the Divination Witch episode. We get to, you know, all through the series, we've been seeing the Divination Witch act erratic and say odd non-sequiturs and maybe yell out in different languages. And so now that whole story is explained about what's going on with her
I thought they did a great job of having that make sense.
Yes. Right?
You know, that you got to see what she was seeing that we didn't see before. And I thought they did a really, really strong job of making that work.
Absolutely. It was one of those things that was bugging me because I was like, she being possessed, is something going on? Is there a ghost? But then so I like the explanation again to see how she sees time, which is not necessarily linear.
And because she was so affected by time or through time or however you want to do that, I kept wondering while watching this episode if this was somehow in some way connected to Kang. Was that part of the writer's room thought process? You know, was that an originating thought just to kind of link it in and, you know, maybe we nod to it later on, or if that's completely off the table now that they're walking away from Kang. But I did wonder if there is an element of Kang in there.
That's a good thought. That's I'm not sure, of course, but it could have been something that was going to be a bigger deal. But as you say, now they've walked away, they're like, well, we'll just leave this bit in, but not
put
that bit in.
I
got to say, I'm excited to see Aubrey. We don't see Aubrey Plaza, her character, really this episode, but I feel like she's going to be in the next episode. Mm-hmm. And man, I love her character in this show.
I do have some concerns that there are two episodes left to go and they're going to drop them both next week. And it feels like there's still a whole lot of story left, you know, and I'm like, is there enough runway for this ending?
Well, thing, you know, with the erratic length of the episodes.
Yeah.
You know, it could be an hour and a half worth of TV and, you know, probably you could get through what's left. And they may not wrap everything with a neat bow because they may have ideas for a third. Actually, there is a third arc, right? This is a Vision Quest. Is that what they're calling the series?
Yeah,
which will continue on the whole, Vision, Agatha, Wanda storyline.
So, Andrew, I have a question just because I have not seen this episode yet.
Yeah.
But I thought Aubrey Plaza, I mean, I thought it was actually what I read online in my spoilerific
Wikipedia article.
I didn't read the Wikipedia. I just see Twitter. But I thought Aubrey Plaza's character was in this episode and there was a pretty big reveal about her.
There's a reveal, but she's not really in the episode.
Yes. Gotcha. There's like an image of her and while they're talking about her and about what they've discovered about her and the reveal you're referencing. But she's not actually part of the episode.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. But you're right. There is an image of her as they figure this thing out. And also, I gotta say,
they brought that character in and Thanos isn't in the MCU anymore, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It would have been perfect. I mean, because she was a big part of what I loved about those first two episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I got to say, you guys haven't met her yet, but except for Aaron. But the Divination, Lily's mentor from her youth.
Yeah.
I am so sad she's not going to be in any more episodes because I love that actress playing that role. She was fantastic at it. But yeah, I highly recommend Agatha. I'm excited that they timed it out that the last two episodes are going to be right before Halloween. WandaVision's my favorite MCU television series, and after a rough start, to be granted, Agatha is very much a strong contender as well.
Well, you know, since you've mentioned Marvel Cinematic Universe rough starts, you know, since we last spoke, you know, New York Comic Con happened, and this isn't New York Comic Con news, but, you know, there's additional news that's just kind of coming out over the past week. And they have, you know, 20th Century Fox owned by Disney, you know, what isn't owned by Disney? Marvel owned by Disney, blah, 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 right? Well, they announced this week their slate of movies, you know, kind of like, you know, big releases for 2025 and 2026. Maybe it was an earnings call or something. I don't know. But that movie the Blade movie that they've been trying to get off the ground for like 7 years has been removed from the schedule indefinitely. And they swapped out and put a new Predator movie in its place, I think for July 2026, I think is the or maybe it's July 2025, actually. I think it might be July 2025. But Blade is just going nowhere in the MCU. They just can't figure out how to make that movie work.
No. No, and I don't know from what I read, they didn't give a reason for this current, most recent delay.
Yeah, they just can't figure it out for some reason. And that's it's a shame, because it's something that I would be looking forward to, but
yeah.
I mean, I guess they don't want to put out a piece of crap.
It hasn't stopped them until now. But they do seem to have taken a step back. I mean, with Captain America's Brave New World, like that one, they sent it all the way back to redoing some of the script and reshooting. When the movie was ready and supposed to have been out this year, they decided it was terrible.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they fixed that one. I got the dates wrong. So it was November 2025 was when Blade was supposed to release. And now instead they will release Predator Badlands, which is by the same creative team who did the Prey movie that came out, I don't know, a year or two ago on Hulu. Was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if any of this has to do with Wolverine and Deadpool and Blade showing up in there. I wonder if that made them rethink things or try to adjust things in some way. I don't know.
I'd like to think so, but at the same time, I mean, they've been trying to get this film off the ground for a long time, and they just haven't. So I don't know.
Which is a shame, because I would love to see – I enjoyed seeing Blade and Wolverine and Deadpool. I'd love to see some new Blade, when, no matter who's playing the role on the big screen or small screen.
Yeah. But what you will get, Andrew, instead in July 2026, this is what I was thinking of, is Spider-Man 4, directed by the same director of Shang-Chi.
Okay.
Shang-Chi will be directing the new Spider-Man 4 movie featuring Tom Holland. And it'll be a big Tom Holland month, because also in July 2026, he'll be starring in the next Christopher Nolan movie. So it's going to be a Tom Holland kind of month, July 2026.
Do we have a subtitle for Spider-Man 4 yet?
We do not. However, we do know it is being released between Avengers Doomsday, which comes out May 1st, and Avengers Secret Wars, I think is the next one after that. So it's coming out in between.
Yeah, okay. I'm really looking forward to seeing the trailers for it when it starts having trailers, because I like where it left us after the last one. I think it's a good setup for future Spider-Man movies, but I really need to see what they're going to do with it.
Well, you know, Tom Holland's going to be 40 years old by that point, probably. he wasn't high school age when they started these movies.
Right.
So how old is he now? Let's look at this. Tom Holland. Okay. He's 28. So he will be 30 when that movie comes out, and hopefully we'll have, you know, won't be in college in the movie. Hopefully they'll breeze past those years.
Maybe he'll be teaching. Maybe he'll be at the point where he's become like a high school science teacher.
Hey, I mean, at this point, just give him a kid. Just give me Ultimate Spider-Man the movie. That's really all I care about anyway. That's the Spider-Man that I'm enjoying right now.
Fair. Him and Zendaya can just be married and have some kids.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, that's probably what's going to happen in real life anyway. So
why don't they hire us to write these things? Seriously.
That is a good question. Kevin Feige does listen to this podcast. I have it on good authority. So, Kevin.
It's because they can't make Paul's deal.
Yeah, they can't afford me. That's why. That's right.
Well, and the writer that Paul carries is just crazy. I mean.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and they're afraid of offending the peeps.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, I feel like I could write a Blade movie. Someone call me. I got this.
How hard could it be to write a Blade movie?
Well, I mean, it's after vampires, about 3,000 shitty Blade comics, apparently it's pretty fucking hard.
That's fair.
It seems like it'd be easy to direct it. You just sit back. More blood. More blood.
I feel like it's getting the casting, I think, that might be the harder part. Getting the right actors in the right spots might be.
I mean, they had a cast set.
I know I say this all the time, but I was really happy with the Sticky Fingers Blade miniseries. I loved that show. I really did.
I have it on DVD.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that show. Yeah. Is that on Disney Plus?
I don't think so. I don't know.
I haven't looked for it.
I haven't either. I just wonder, because you know, they moved so much of the Marvel stuff over there. I just wonder if it's over there. Because I do really love that show.
Wasn't it like a TNT production when it came out?
It was that or FX.
Yeah.
It was one of those cable channels.
Or Spike. It was Spike. Yeah, it was Spike.
It was Spike.
Mm-hmm. Now the Paramount Network. So who the hell knows where the rights for that one are?
Yeah.
It's a good show.
I love how you could cut the tension between the two leads with a knife in every episode. I tell you what, mm-hmm.
I'm gonna have to go and watch it again now.
Me, yeah. I kind of feel like that too.
Yeah, I just.
Well, before you do, let's finish the podcast.
I was gonna go dig through my DVDs real quick.
Take your microphone with you, Aaron, because we want to talk about Absolute Wonder Woman number one.
Oh. Now I gotta tell you. I picked up Absolute Wonder Woman number one. I didn't have high hopes for it, and it blew my hair back. Let me just say,
this book is freaking fantastic.
This book is dope. I mean, it is so good. It is good on every level. There wasn't one part of this book that I just wasn't sopping up with a biscuit. I enjoyed this book so much.
There is one negative thing I have to say about it. Uh-oh. Sorry. Well, go ahead, Wayne. You go first.
I was going to say, what's really surprising me about these Absolute books is that I expected a world where these heroes are darker, and they are darker, but they're still so heroic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like these are, without a doubt, still very much heroes.
It's still very much the people they were. It's not like this isn't Diana. It's not like she doesn't have the same birth, you know, aspect to her. It's just that her life took a different path.
Yeah, the core of her is the same. It's just, you know, the edges are rubbed different, right? I mean, I really loved her origin story, you know, and how Cersei, is that who it is?
Yeah, Cersei.
Who raises her, you know, from a child. And, you know, she starts off with, well, I guess this kid's going to die, you know. You know, Apollo didn't say, I've got to take care of her. And then, you know, you get this ongoing narrative, you know, that is beautifully illustrated, by the way, you know, kind of showing the passage of time. And, you know, it has this line that, you know, you fall in love with a child by caring for it. And I just loved how, as she cared for Diana, she's feathering the nest, right? You know, you can see the cave in which they live suddenly becomes very warm and hospitable and full of life. And I really loved every moment of the storytelling in this book. I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, my favorite part are those two full page spreads with the four rows showing different scenes as Diana grows older and Cersei's, you know, cave. It's just gorgeous. I also love the part where she, you know, the little lizard tries to breathe fire on, you know, toddler Diana. Yeah. And she's like, no, no, no. And then lets it go.
Yeah.
Or when she yeets the snake. I mean, it literally says yeet on the page.
Yeah. Yeah. She just chucks it and starts like, oh.
Yeah, this is it's just so. Now, the one negative thing I was going to say about it is there's an awful lot of two-page spreads, which my old eyes don't gravitate to in a digital setting. Some, you know, like there's the sequence that Aaron referred to where she's growing up. I find that, like, I don't know, maybe because I need to read it more in guided view, but I feel sometimes that guided view misses some of the details.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And full page view is too small, but it's still well told for sure.
I did find that I was jumping out of guided view and into full page a couple of times.
Yeah.
Just so I could absorb the entire scene. Because it is very, very much sort of a landscape sort of storytelling in that spread.
Yeah. You know, I'm a huge guided view guy, but when I try to do guided view on, say, the laptop versus the iPad, guided view is terrible. It goes in the wrong, like, it'll skip panels that you need to read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it is just completely and totally horrible. And I don't know how the guided view experience is different between the iPad app versus the web page, because it should be set to go to the same panels in the same order, but it's not. How do you screw that up?
Which one are you saying is better, the iPad or
the iPad?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is unreadable on the laptop most of the time because it'll skip the important panel you need. And then go back to it at the end of the page, even though it's at the top of the page.
Well, as someone who reads physical comic books, I don't have that struggle, but I will say it's a gorgeous two-page spread. And for the most part, if we're talking about a little bit of nitpicking, the art is amazing. The one piece of art that I'm less crazy about is the design of the big evil monster Diana's fighting at the end. It's just kind of pink and smooth skinned, and I'm not crazy about the design on the big bad.
It reminds me very much of the kaiju like monsters that show up in the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense, BPRD. It reminds me very much of those types of monsters. It did seem a bit nondescript in a lot of ways, but it worked for me. This whole thing worked for me.
I adored this book. It was way better than I expected it to. And don't get me wrong, I liked Absolute Batman as well. This one was definitely better, but we're off to a strong start.
Paul,
go ahead.
Paul had a negative that I don't think you said yet. I'm curious to hear.
I did. It was the two page spreads in digital view.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, that's all. Yep. That was it.
Here's the thing that I'll offer about this is that, you know, writing in these, you know, different settings, you know, an Elseworlds setting or the Absolute setting or something like that, allows them to do something that they can't do otherwise, which is tell a really good Wonder Woman story. I think it has been a very long time that I've read a really interesting, good Diana story.
I like what Tom King's been doing in the Wonder Woman book, but it's the pacing is just.
I like what he's doing with Wonder Woman's daughter. I like the stuff that's happening around her, but I've not enjoyed her. And I think there's a reason for that, I think they're afraid to write Wonder Woman in a certain way. I think that DC doesn't want her to be sexual for one. They really kind of steer away from those types of relationships for Diana. And I think it limits who she can be. Whereas our other, hero characters, get to be fully rounded people. I feel like that is denied Diana because of our hangups about sex in this country. I like, how interesting this version of Diana is. And I don't think that they'll probably shy away from those kinds of things, telling these types of stories with her.
I would agree. And Paula said he enjoyed Absolute Wonder Woman more than Absolute Batman. Both good, but gave the edge to Wonder Woman. What do you guys? Do you guys have a favorite between the two Absolute books so far?
Given that I have not read Absolute Batman, I will give it to Absolute Wonder Woman.
Is that a choice or just a circle?
That's a choice. I did not like the look of Absolute Batman.
Gotta give it a shot.
Yeah. I think out of the two, for me, I'd have to go Absolute Wonder Woman as well. And the only thing that pushes it over for me, like the Absolute Batman story is great. I don't like the weird bat gimmick of his costume, though, of like standing on the wings of his cape.
Yeah
I mean, it's different, but I like it.
Yeah, and the battle axe chest piece.
Yeah, I like now that I think is badass.
Yeah, now that I love.
Yeah, since we're talking about Batman, it was I mentioned New York Comic Con. There was some pretty big news at a New York Comic Con about Batman, which is that when current writer of Batman, Chip Zdarsky, maybe? I don't know. Who's writing Batman? I think it's Chip Zdarsky. I'm probably wrong on that. It is Chip Zdarsky. When he wraps up his run in early 2025 on the book, and because he's been on it for a little bit now, he's had this multi-year thread going, that we will have Hush 2. The return of creative team Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee are going to return to Batman for another, I guess, 12 issue arc, a sequel to the original Hush storyline, which, we've had sequels to the original Hush storyline written by Paul Dini in the pages of Detective Comics. So I would be really sad if those are just erased from continuity. But, I'm excited about it. Yeah, I think one of the things that I found interesting is they released some preview art for it. And the Jim Lee pencils are beautiful.
Yeah.
But somewhere between pencils and inks and colored art, it loses so much detail and impact. And it, you know, I've kind of had that issue with Jim Lee stuff for a few years now. I don't know if it's his choice of inker, it's usually Scott Williams, or if it's just the CG or the computer, you know, coloring that they've done on his art. But it feels like it feels boring. And I'm a little worried about that with some of the preview art they showed for Hush 2.
Yeah, Paul, since you mentioned Chip Zdarsky, I highly recommend his YouTube channel. He only has 12 videos on it, but he is hilarious. He has like whole comedy things where he is teaching a intern how to write comic books, but he's doing it as, you know, himself, but a caricature of himself, being egotistical, and it is so good. And he has a whole thing about Howard the Duck on there, and like I said, only 12 videos, well worth the watch.
I will check it out.
So is Absolute Superman next?
Absolute Superman is coming out soon. I don't know the exact date, but yeah, Absolute Superman. It might be this week. We'll find out at the end of this podcast.
I guess I would ask, is everyone planning to get Absolute Superman?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah,
zero doubt. But for me, as much as I loved Absolute Wonder Woman, and I truly did, for me, the book of the week has to be Detective Comics 1090, featuring new creative team Tom Taylor and Michael Janin. I loved everything about this book.
I picked it up because it was a new creative team, and it seemed like it was going to be a good jumping on point, and I was completely blown away. I haven't read a Batman book regularly in a while, and I am hooked right now.
Well, I mean, I think the last page did a lot to raise my opinion of this book. You know, it was fairly good. I wasn't, you know, overflowing with praise for it. But you get to that last page where you see that twist, if you will, that was amazing.
I just, there's so many, like, Oracle is written so well here. You know, you go through her comments on things, and it's like the kid that Batman's chasing down, she describes his horrible past and follows it up with, so basically he's the perfect candidate for your next Robin. It's like those little jabs here and there, describing, you know, how his body has been worn down over time with like knee surgeries, and you know, he's not quite as fast as he used to be. It's like all these little things to build up to him feeling guilty about not being fast enough to save someone.
Well, and I did feel like he somewhat completely overreacted as he swung into that room and slapped that kid down.
Oh, completely.
Like the kid's calling 911 and obviously feels bad. Like you probably didn't have to beat the crap out of him so that he ran off, right?
Yeah, but he doesn't realize that at the time. He just knows this kid shot him. He doesn't see the phone with the 911 until after he punched him.
But before he does punch him, the kid says, "I'm sorry, I'm so sorry," and then Batman just lays into him. But maybe that's a common thing for hardened criminals to be like, "I'm sorry," when Batman shows up. I don't know.
Well, Aaron, you've been pretty quiet. What did you think of Detective Comics? Did you read it?
I did. I was not expecting to like this book. And that's largely because I found Detective Comics, the title, to have been rather hit and miss over the last several years. But I was pleasantly surprised at how much I enjoyed both the art in the book as well as the writing. You know, the big reveal at the end of the book is a strong counterbalance to the message of the book. And the message of the book is how Bruce learns to value every life, even the life of someone like the Joker, right? And he picks up that lesson from his father, Dr. Thomas Wayne, who's very much, you know, a doctor who is, you treat the patient in front of you. Doesn't matter who that person is, it doesn't matter what they've done, you treat the person in front of you. And we hear that message, you know, as Bruce remembers the lesson in the conversation. And then spoilers, were slapped with it at the end of the book, because the patient that he treats, who clearly is a terrible person, We find out, as the reader, we find out that it's Joe Chill, who, go ahead.
And that even adds more context to earlier in the book, because they have a new character,
right.
Scarlett Martha Scott, who was one of the last people that Martha Wayne saved and got her mother into safe houses. And
she's the daughter of Joe Chill.
Yes. Yeah. That realization that one of his closest friends here that we've never heard of before is Joe Chill's daughter is just, that it added more context to her.
Yeah.
And I really like her character here.
Yeah, I thought it was a great setup. But, I feel like Tom Taylor is building a niche for himself in reinventing origin stories or reweighting origin stories. Because, this is very much what he just did on Nightwing, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, okay, buddy, one more of these and we're going to go ahead and pigeonhole you.
He likes the retcon, go back to the core of, what the character is. And, you mentioned Nightwing. I picked up Nightwing 119 this week.
Yeah.
Because that's, his last issue, Tom Taylor's last issue was last week, and now he's on Detective Comics. And so Nightwing has a new creative team as part of this all-in thing. It's written by Dan Waters with art by Dexter Soy. Dan Waters is the guy, one of the co-writers of the recent Destro miniseries from Skybound. And, honestly, he takes the Nightwing book and kind of continues on the same path and status quo, at least in this first issue that Tom Taylor was. You still have Oracle and their relationship. He didn't in the first issue undo that. You still have Dick Grayson's sister is the mayor. So, that was something that was established during the Tom Taylor run. So it very much it feels like a continuation of those threads, maybe not quite as skillfully written or drawn as Tom Taylor and Bruno Redondo were. But it was a pretty solid book. I think it was good enough for me to give one more issue to. And if it's because it's fine. Right. It's not knocking my socks off. It's just fine. It's a fine Nightwing book. But, with so much out there, it's not amazing.
It's fine. It's not a ringing endorsement, Paul.
Well, it's for what it's worth. And we talked a little bit about this with the end of the Tom Taylor run on Nightwing. Half of his run was great and half of it was fine. And this is more in that fine category. It's not bad. It's just not great. It's just right there in the middle. It's whelming.
Yeah, because I read the preview pages and the preview pages just did not sell me on the new creative team.
Yeah, it's certainly not something that I feel is must read the top of the read pile or anything like that. But if you're a Nightwing fan, I will say I was concerned because I liked what Tom Taylor did. And at least in this first issue, they didn't undo any of that. They seem to just be taking off of that. So I appreciated that at least.
That's good. Well, this week, a book that I have been very much looking forward to came out. It was Superman number 19 featuring Superwoman.
Doomsday.
And Doomsday. Yeah. Less excited about that. Because I just feel like it's a lot of Doomsday. But I really very much enjoyed, Lois's return as Superwoman. I guess she got her powers during the whole recent Amazo.
They did not. In fact, that was one of the things they teased on the last page, right? I assumed that. But, on the last page, they said, how did Lois Lane get her powers? And they were very elusive about it. So it's one of the mysteries they're setting up for the next probably year of this book.
Yeah. But I do, it's kind of a classic story in the Superman books for over the decades. Every now and again, Lois gets some powers, and it's kick. I love it. I think it's a lot of fun. I am particularly amused that no one's been able to get a picture of Superwoman.
Right.
Well, they keep setting Jimmy.
She doesn't have glasses to protect her secret identity.
Exactly. Well, and she keeps setting up Jimmy. When are you going to get me a picture of Superwoman? And then shines him on so that he doesn't get the picture. I think that's mean to do to Jimmy. Just saying.
A little bit. But Jimmy is not one of the people who remembers the secret identity, right? When all that was undone, clearly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because otherwise he would be like, I know it's you, Lois. Like, I know Clark the Superman. Yeah. But I couldn't remember who was in the bubble that got to remember the secret identity.
It's also, very few. It's only other heroes and his family.
I also was very amused when Clark and Lois duck into the same closet to change. And I was like, okay, I think maybe this could get a little rated R in here, you know.
But it probably did. They're super fast. They could knock that out and then go save the day.
Knock that out.
I really liked this book. I thought it was – I mean, I've enjoyed Joshua Williamson's run on Superman. Uh-huh. I think it's been – like I said at the beginning of it, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the animated series. It's got a lot of fun to it. Yeah. And this book was just, and especially because now we've got Dan Mora on art.
Yeah.
It's really just, obviously there are non-fun aspects to it. You know, there's callbacks to the death of Superman. Lex Luthor has his, you know, has lost his memory, but you know, is growing a pretty badass red beard. But I really did enjoy this book. I just thought it was fun. And I like – I'm not the biggest Doomsday fan, but I do find the reveal of Doomsday of the future being the Time Trapper kind of interesting.
That pissed me off, I'll be honest. Oh. Because I did not care for the book. And one of the reasons is I am sick and tired of them retconning who the Time Trapper is. He's been like five different characters at this point. And the idea of him being a older Doomsday, I really dislike. I was happy with him being, I think the last one he was Superboy Prime.
Yeah.
I was happy with that one.
I have to say I don't care for an intelligent Doomsday. Doomsday is a force of nature. I don't want Doomsday ever speaking, you know. And so him showing up as the Time Trapper really didn't work for me.
Yeah, you know. Time Trapper is a intelligent character that tries to outsmart, and that has never been Doomsday. Doomsday is his strongest when he is the force of nature. And I like Superman telling Lois that he's a force of nature.
Yeah.
So no, yeah. I did not care for that reveal at all.
I did like Lois's reaction to Doomsday, though. Like, you know, there was this moment where she's horrified and the next one was like, you motherfucker. I mean, you know, cause I liked how she was just ready to go, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas as a reader, I'm like, oh, Lois, do not get involved in this.
Yeah. You know? I was like, go be an editor in chief.
Yeah. But you want to be far away from this, you know. But I liked everything other than the Doomsday stuff in this book.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll see. I'm on board. I've enjoyed this run, and I enjoyed this book. It sounds like more than either one of you.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a second issue, a second chance, but I was not happy with this issue. I wanted to love it, and I didn't.
Well, that's a shame. Well, are you reading Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Wayne? I feel like I ask you this every issue, and I don't remember what your answer is.
I am.
Did you love issue 3?
I did. It was weird. But that can be said about all of the issues of this series so far, but this one especially weird. So the storylines for the series, for people that aren't reading it, has been something happened and the turtles broke apart months ago, and they've been living their own lives and they're all bitter at each other. And so for the first 4 issues, it's about one of the turtles, a focus on their life until the Foot Clan comes to try to kill them. And for this one, we got Leonardo's life, where he has found man-eating turtles to try to find his center again with the man-eating turtles, which was really weird.
But they only eat decaying.
Eating turtles.
They're corpse-eating turtles.
Yeah, they don't kill people. They just eat people.
Yes. And the Ganges River has these turtles that people will send their... You know, when they, because it's like a, you know, bodies are cremated and their remains are, you know, kind of washed into the river. And these turtles have gained a taste for that. And so it's about Leo trying to commune with them and understand life and, you know, kind of take a break from being a ninja. And the Foot finds him. I thought maybe I was just in a good mood this week because I liked everything I read.
No, I like this book too, Paul. I dug the art and I dug the story. I liked, you know, every single one of these issues has been a different slice of storytelling, you know, in the way it's told. And I very much appreciated the more introspective, the more navel gazing, if you will, that we got from Leonardo. I dug it. I thought it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I dug the juxtaposition between him and the mud turtles. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah. And there's no mystery like there is in Raphael's.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it was very much like a Rambo type storyline, right? Where he's trying to take on this life of peace, but violence finds him, and you know, you are reminded that he is so badass.
I loved how he buries his swords, and then when the foot show up, he just goes to dig them up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I really enjoyed this, and I am enjoying seeing the turtles get back together, particularly having Michelangelo just keeps hitting Raphael in the fight until Leo gets there. I love them interacting with each other.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, I mean, I'm this book is just really well written. The art is great. I still don't know who the ongoing artist is going to be because each issue is by a different artist, but I'm enjoying the hell out of it. It's a great start to the series.
Completely agree. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, you know, Aaron, we had mentioned Jeff Loeb earlier in this podcast, and I had forgotten to mention that Batman The Long Halloween has a sequel that has started. Written by Jeff Loeb, it was originally intended to be him and Tim Sale doing this sequel to the Long Halloween called The Last Halloween. But obviously Tim Sale passed away, so what's happening is instead it's still written by Jeff Loeb, but a new artist is doing each issue. So like the first issue was by Eduardo Risso and the second issue was by Klaus Janson. So the second issue of Batman The Last Halloween is coming out, and I feel like I need to get caught up because I enjoyed The Long Halloween quite a bit. And I forgot that they were publishing this sequel. So that's coming out next week. Also from DC Comics, Action Comics issue 1073, which is, again, Mark Waid and Clayton Henry are the creative team on Action Comics currently. So that comes out next week. From Marvel Comics, we get the final issue of Zeb Wells' run on Amazing Spider-Man, featuring the conclusion of his, you know, Tombstone versus Spider-Man storyline. It's a special oversized finale that also sets up the upcoming arc, The Eight Deaths of Spider-Man. We're
really looking forward to this issue.
Yeah, me too. And I'm looking forward to what comes next because The Eight Deaths of Spider-Man is written by Joe Kelly and features Spider-Man working for the new Sorcerer Supreme, Doctor Doom. So I'm looking forward to the preview and hopefully it'll be good. Also, from Image Comics, we have Red Coat issue 7, which is the end of the first story arc. So I'll probably have to get caught up because I think I'm about two issues behind there to get caught up in time for that one.
I'm way far behind on Red Coat.
Really?
I think young Albert Einstein broke you.
It did. I'm not a fan of young Albert Einstein.
No. Well, I will say we didn't talk about it this week, Aaron, but Rook number 6 ended pretty strong, and that book's going on a break until 2025 to give the artist time to catch up. So,
yeah, and I need to get caught up on that as well. I didn't get fatigue on that one. I just, you know, I'm far back. I think I'm like three issues behind.
Yeah. So
that and more. So no Absolute Superman this week.
Absolute Superman. So good question. So Absolute Superman comes out the following week, November 7th.
All right.
Is Wednesday the 6th?
It's too long.
That's when Absolute Superman will be coming out.
And the other two Absolute books, it's what, Green Lantern and Shazam?
Yeah, but I don't think those come out until 2025. I think Green Lantern, Martian Manhunter, I think, and Flash. So I think there's three of them. But I think I don't think they come out until 2025.
Okay. Is there not an Absolute Ambush Bug?
Not yet. But there is going to be an Absolute Catman, Aaron. He's in the pages of Absolute Batman number 1, so you may want to pick that up.
Excellent. I forgot about that. Yeah, you probably like that.
I'm going to call it right now. April 1st, we'll have Absolute Ambush Bug.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I will tell you, Aaron, if there was ever a time that we might see Catman on the big screen, it's when James Gunn is leading the DC movies.
That's true. That is fair.
You may actually get Catman up on the big screen, especially since they're saying that that there is a Secret Six or whatever they're called, movie on the way.
Yeah. Love that book. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. What absolute characters do you want to see, or what DC characters do you want to see get the absolute treatment? How badly do you want to see Catman on the big screen? Let us know at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X.
Well, guys, it was great getting caught up with all of you this week. That's great. I mean, we full quieted the repeater. It's great.
It was good talking to you guys.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
All right. Bye, guys.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.